Jeff Depp's is the greatest player that's ever played in Florida.
This nugget's pink and I hate it.
About to go hard for 50 minutes.
You can't say stuff like this on podcast, alright?
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and this is a show for Monday, October 19th. Well, I'm not actually Adam Berry. He actually blew out his voice over the weekend cheering for OAR at Gator Growl. So I'm Kyle Maestri, and I'll be filling in as your host for today's show. With me are our two fearless football writers. Go ahead and introduce yourselves. Mike DeFerdinando.
Hey, what's up, guys?
And Mike McCall.
I'm jealous that you get to skip this awkward intro part that we always have to do.
Yeah, as you should be. All right, well, let's get right into the Arkansas game this weekend. Big show today. Lots to talk about. And we're going to start with Arkansas, in case you're in a hole. UF won 23-20 this weekend at home on homecoming. Caleb Sturgis, field goal with 9 seconds left, put them over the top. Go ahead and throw it to McCall over here. Give us a little rundown of the game, maybe some key things that happened.
Yeah, Florida showed a general lack of focus in the game. It was very reminiscent of the Ole Miss loss last year, except somehow they won, even though they totally deserved to lose. Didn't really have any point in the game where they really looked great on either side of the ball, really. I mean, the defense was really affected by having to be on the field so much. Florida had 4 fumbles. That's where the lack of focus really comes in. They didn't have great ball security, even though some of the fumbles were kind of fluky. I mean, Chris Rainey had one caused by a defender's foot that he had just juked. And then Aaron Hernandez's fumble looked like it was caused by Florida lineman James Wilson's elbow. So things didn't look great. The defense gave up some big plays. It was kind of uncharacteristic. And Arkansas's running back, Johnson, just bowled everyone over. I don't know how many tackles he broke. It's probably triple digits on Saturday. He just went off.
On one run, triple digits.
Yeah. So, and the probably the hardest thing to watch if you're a Florida fan was that 75-yard touchdown that Greg Child scored, where he torched Janoris Jenkins down the sideline, cut all the way across the field, and then juked Janoris Jenkins at, like, the 5-yard line and kind of fumbled into the end zone. What was up with that play? Like, did they review that and say that he recovered it so it's still a touchdown or what?
I didn't get the final ruling, but I'm pretty sure you can't break the plane with a fumble of the end zone. So Greg Childs recovered it anyway in the end zone. So if they would have ruled that he didn't break the plane with possession, I think it would have been put on the one, and he would have taken it from there. But it was funny because after the game, I went to the Arkansas press conference, and somebody asked Greg Childs about that, and Paul Petrino, the offensive coordinator and brother of Bobby, was about to walk out. He had just finished his interview, and he yelled something real disgruntled over his shoulder when he heard that question. It was like, yeah, they just tried to cheat anyway. Like, he recovered it anyway. It was really awkward. And I was like, dude, you would have just gotten it at the one. Like, I don't think the refs were really doing anything sinister there, but it definitely was a weird play.
Yeah, that's kind of bizarre and uncalled for. Yeah. Also, Tim Tebow sacked 6 times. That's tied for the most since he's been here. He didn't look real great. He wasn't doing a good job of keeping his eyes downfield at the receivers. He went into the kind of Tebow mode that you've seen him go into since he's been here, and even he did the same thing in high school. When there's a close game, it's almost like he doesn't trust anyone else with the ball, and if stuff doesn't look perfect for him, he's going to take it and do it all himself. And that's why you see him carry the ball 27 times on Saturday, which is astronomical.
Deeper, some thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really rough day for Janoris Jenkins, who, since he's been here, has been pretty much perfect at corner. He's been shut down, him and Joe. And he also got burned right before the half on that 44-yard play that set up the field goal, so he had a rough day. I was surprised to see that.
Yeah, that 44-yarder, I think he thought Will Hill was going to come over the top and give him some help. He just gave up on the play and started jogging.
Well, from what I heard from Joe Hayden after the game, it was – or from Stamper, I can't remember, maybe both of them – the play at the end of the first half was Jenkins' fault entirely. That was just man coverage, and the guy ran right by him, and he just messed up. He didn't cover him. And the 75-yard touchdown, he was supposed to get safety help from Ahmad Black over the top because it was 3rd and 17, so you'd think they'd be covering the deep ball. But Ahmad Black didn't get over in time because they sent 2 guys vertical down that side of the field, and he stayed with the inside guy. And when he didn't get over the top, Ryan Mallett made really a hell of a throw stepping up in the pocket. So that one, not entirely his fault, but Janoris Jenkins definitely had a rough day. He also got straight up trampled by Dennis Johnson at the end of one of his fantastic runs. Other than that, let's move into the offense a little bit. Let's talk about some struggles they faced. Mike alluded to the fact that Tebow had a very rough day, despite the stats he ended up with, you know, because of the Deontay Thompson long touchdown pass. But Deefer, what did you see out of Tebow? What did you think of the offense as a whole?
I mean, the six sacks jump out at you right away, and the line didn't play great, but some of that's definitely on Tebow. I mean, Urban Meyer pointed the fact that he was holding on to the ball really for a really long time. A lot of those plays couldn't get rid of it. Now, maybe that's a product of the receivers not getting open. I mean, Riley Cooper got open early, dropped the touchdown pass, but so maybe he just has no one to throw the ball to, so he's holding on to it, but at some point, you have to get rid of the ball. I mean, I know he can run around and make plays, and if he holds on to it and someone gets open, then it's worth it, but you got to get rid of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I made a real point to watch the receivers pretty closely this game, and they were open a lot of the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were only, of those six sacks, I know one of them was absolutely a coverage sack, where he actually kept his eyes downfield and was looking for someone the whole way. I think they were in the red zone in the second quarter, and he got blown up because no one got open. But, I mean, there was one of the sacks in the third quarter, I believe, where I think it was David Nelson or Deontay Thompson, you guys probably remember this, was running like a post, and there was no one around him. Like, he had a touchdown.
I think it was Deontay, yeah. But I'm not 100%.
And Tebow got sacked. I mean, and I also noticed David Nelson was open a decent amount, just kind of finding a hole in the middle of the defense and sitting. Now, granted, a lot of these guys that are open are probably the third and fourth option, and some of these are out of five receiver sets. So, I mean, it can be – it's tough to make those reads right every time. But guys were open, and it's not like the receiving corps is just running around and flopping on the ground and not getting open. A lot of it does go on Tebow. But like I said, I mean, this is something you see him do in these situations when it's a tight game where he just locks down and takes control. And he doesn't have Percy Harvin anymore, who touched the ball, I think, 22 times last year against Ole Miss to take some of that off of him. So I don't know who he trusts, but you look at his completions. He had 17, and 13 of them went to either Aaron Hernandez or his roommate Riley Cooper. So it looks like those are the two guys that he feels like he can count on. And that Riley Cooper catch on 3rd and 10, last drive, Riley Cooper, it's a play designed to go to him if it's man-to-man coverage. It was man-to-man coverage, so he knows the ball is coming to him on 3rd and 10. It's the most important play of the game, you know, so far for Florida. He slips coming off the line, falls to the ground, and at this point, you know, he's thinking like, oh my God, this is totally messed up. And he gets up, throws the corner by him. Tebow makes a pretty good throw, and Cooper cuts in front of the defensive back to make the catch. That was huge, and I guess makes up for the fact that he dropped a perfectly thrown 64-yard touchdown earlier in the game that would have made things a lot easier on Florida.
And we talked about this a little bit off the air yesterday, but it seems like Tebow goes, you know, he's going through his progressions. Is Cooper open? Is Hernandez open? If they're not open, I'm just going to run with it. And that's it. He doesn't go through all his progressions.
He threw to Riley Cooper 4 times on that last drive, the game-winning drive. One of them very well could have cost Florida the game because he threw one up in the end zone to Cooper, and he really underthrew it. The corner could and should have had a pick. If it was Eric Berry, it would have been pick 6 to 100.
Of course it would have.
104 yards. But Cooper kind of pass interfered a little bit and got his hand in there and saved an interception. But
yeah, I mean, he did. The other three did go for catches and yards. But yeah, that throw was definitely questionable. We talked about Tebow, and I don't want to get into Tebow NFL talk too much. But I will say that when I was watching the game, this was really the first game I watched where I had serious doubts about his ability to play at the next level, just because when he has to move in the pocket or slide left or right or move up and down, his eyes don't stay downfield. He's looking for a way to escape and a way to run. He doesn't try to manipulate the pocket the way you need to in the NFL and really keep your eyes downfield until somebody breaks open and then finally run with the ball.
I do think, too, though, I mean, it's a different game here that he's playing, and that is something that has served him very well since he's been here. So, I mean, you'd like to see him do that, since you know that's what you have to do in the NFL is work the pocket better, but he doesn't have to yet. And even if he does work the pocket, it's no guarantee that he's going to find someone open every time. So I'm okay with him tucking it and running it if he can do it effectively. But Arkansas came into this game with a pretty poorly rated defense. Were they last in the SEC, or they're near the bottom?
Yeah, I think they were last in the SEC. Yeah. They were 100th in the nation in pass defense coming into this game.
But if you watch the game, I mean, they did a good job. Yeah, receivers were open a good amount, but they did a good job staying on Tebow, not letting him break right. It. The runs up the middle, you can talk about this, Kyle, the way that they stopped all the runs up the middle that Florida goes with. I mean, yeah, it was a poorly rated defense, but if you watch the game on Saturday, they played a very good game. The defensive tackles were blowing every play up.
Right, but you're making a lot of points that are 100% true, but also that lead to he should have kept his eyes downfield and tried to pass the ball, because they played the run so well, both with the running backs and with Tebow. They were the 100th rated pass defense in the nation coming into this game. I think he should have made a conscious effort. Hey, our matchups for this game where I'm going to be able to succeed is getting the ball out and getting it to the wide receivers. But yeah, you alluded to the fact that I went into the Arkansas press conference after the game, and Coach Bobby Petrino, he talked about how they really keyed in on trying to take away that dive play, which is, you know, the option read where Rainey or Demps or Moody, whoever it is, just kind of comes across, Tebow puts it in his belly, and he's in between, you know, running between the guard and the tackle up the middle, or he has the option to pull it out and then run with it himself. If you watch the LSU game, which obviously Arkansas did, they ran that play about 1,000 times, and that was something that they really wanted to key in on, and I would argue that they really stopped, Arkansas did, for this game. So it looks to me that they're not creative enough in the way that they're running the ball. I don't know what you guys think with their running backs.
Yeah, let's get deep on the running game. You guys want to do that?
Sure.
Let me read off the stats real quick from Saturday. Tebow, 27 carries for 69 yards, and Demps was next. He had 9 carries for 54 yards. Emmanuel Moody, 3 carries for a whopping 7 yards. Chris Rainey, 6 carries for 6 yards. And Brandon James, 1 carry for 0 yards. So not a very productive day on the ground. It was pretty much like Tebow every play. And yeah, a lot of those plays up the middle were getting stuffed. Like you talked about, they keyed on it. And one thing I think, talk about not being creative, I think it's hard. I know they've done this and been successful with it, and they did it with Harvin. That zone read play, they get the ball so close to the line, and they have to make a read on which hole to go through. They don't have much time to do it. And I mean, you see, we're going to talk about Mark Ingram later at Alabama. That's a guy who has a couple yards to make his pick and figure out where he wants to go. And Demps and Rainey and Moody are having the fun. Like, I know that's what they're good at. I know that they're quick and that's dangerous and everything. But I'd like to see them have a little bit more space to make their decision on where they're going to cut and where they're going to go. I think you got to give them the ball a little bit further out. And I know it hurts the Tebow play fake if he's got to do it. Like, he's up so close to the line, it's really hard to see, even from the press box for me sometimes, who's got the ball at the time of the fake. So I know that diminishes the fake a little bit, but I think you gain more by giving these guys more time to pick their hole.
I agree, and I think what they need to do is they need to run the ball more off tackle, like, and more on the edges, because pretty much gone from the offense, which we saw all the time last year, are those jet sweep plays where Harvin comes in motion, takes the ball, and attacks the edge. Gone are those stretch plays where they're getting them out wide. I mean, it's really just, it's been dive, and it's been Tebow pulling it out and running it off the edge. I think they need to get those speedy running backs coming with good angles on the edge of the defense where it's not, it seems like anytime they get to the edge, they're going up the middle, they hit the cutback lane, and then they bounce it outside until they feel like they can turn a corner, which doesn't always work. But I think the coaching I didn't think was so bad for this game, which I want to get into later, but I do think the lack of creativity with the run game is really becoming a problem.
Yeah, and it's not like they don't have the personnel to run those same plays. Jeff Demps can run those plays at Percy Harvin, and he's just as fast, he's just as elusive, he can do those things. But I mean, 27 carries for Tebow, that's outrageous. I mean, half of those should go to Demps. Demps needs 20 carries.
Most of those aren't like, hey, Tebow, take the ball and run. It's him doing it himself. So, I mean, it's kind of out of the coach's hands a little bit at that point, but you're still right. I mean, Moody should still have more than 3 carries.
Absolutely.
And you know, if you've been listening to the podcast the last couple weeks, we go Moody Demps convo a lot. And I think that we've worked out a settlement here. Kyle, the Demps man, and me, the Moody man. You want to lay it on him, Kyle?
Yeah. Well, after the game, Jeff Demps had a lot of success on the Gators' second-to-last drive. He capped it off with a 10-yard touchdown run to tie the game. And just watching it out there, if you're going to use this dive play the way you are, I would like them to use Moody more early in the game because he's a tough runner. He's going to get in there. He's going to fight for those yards. And you're going to not tire down Demps as much, whose game relies primarily on speed. So what I'd like to see them do, if they really want to commit to this dive play, is use Moody early in the game, let him loosen up the defense, and then get Demps in there later in the game and let him just rip open the tired defense with some fresh legs.
The times that Demps and Rainey, when they broke out last year, a lot of the time it was late in games. I mean, the Arkansas fourth quarter was really, I think, the coming out party for both of them, where it was like, whoa, these guys are awesome. And it's later in the game. It's when everyone gets tired down a little bit, and then you have these lightning bolts coming out of the backfield. And, I mean, running them up Marquise Pouncey's butt is not the most effective way to use them early in a game, where Moody can move the pile, which is something those guys can't really do. And he is a tough runner, and I like that. And also, the play where Chris Rainey fumbled, I like that, too. I like getting them the ball. I don't mean, like, run those outside pitches all the time to them, but I mean, if you can throw it to them out on the outside, if they're going to split them out so much, on the play where Rainey fumbled, I mean, it could have been a touchdown. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was kind of unlucky. He got tripped up and then got hit with a foot, and he fumbled. But you get them the ball out there where they can go one-on-one with somebody already on the outside, and they're not trying to turn the corner on someone who's bigger and just as fast as them, you know, laterally. I like that play, too. Either get them the ball on the outside or, like you said, run them toward the tackles, still move them toward the middle of the field where they have blockers, the offensive line blocking, and let them pick their hole and give them more time to make that decision.
Yeah, I think you're right about the screen passes are the way to go. Those little like bubble screens out to the sides, get them out in space, and you know, God knows we have the greatest blocking receivers ever in David Nelson and Riley Cooper, so take advantage of that.
Yeah, it's just the offense has been just remarkably uncreative, except when it shouldn't be. It's like they won't run screen passes, they won't run those jet sweep plays, they won't run creative different ways to get guys in space. But on 3rd and 1, when they're on the Arkansas side of the field, they try an end around with Riley Cooper. And, you know, they tried a similar play with Brandon James in the previous game. What do you guys think about that play calling?
Asinine, but in both cases. That is the dumbest play call you could have. You have a player on your team who was constructed for this exact situation. 3rd and 1, 4th and 1, you run Tebow up the middle. I don't care if they know it's coming. He normally gets it. What's his conversion rate on that? It's probably 90%.
Right,
it's better than my GPA, put it that way. I mean, you run him with those plays, and the Riley Cooper play, I thought this was kind of interesting. He actually wasn't supposed to throw it. He threw it to Aaron Hernandez in triple coverage. It was supposed to be running, and he saw he couldn't get the corner and he couldn't get there, so he said he had to get rid of it, so he threw it, which not a horrible decision, ad-libbing. I mean, it wasn't a terrible pass. It was triple coverage, but, I mean, it still could have gotten in there. But the play call was awful, and Cooper even said, he was like, yeah, I was surprised when they called that. I thought we were going to go Tebow up the middle. I think everyone did. And this isn't a case where it's like, everyone knows you're going to do it, so you shouldn't do it. It's everyone knows you're going to do it, but so what? Do it anyway, because it always works.
Yeah, Riley Cooper's been watching a little too much Ronnie Brown, Monday Night Football, Wildcat.
I definitely agree. That should be obvious to everyone, including the coaches, though it's not, is Tebow's the best short yardage runner in college football by far. I mean, he will get you a yard, like you said, 90, 95% of the time. I mean, the times that he's just straight stood up at the line are few and far between. The offensive line seems to get a good push up the middle. Marquise Pouncey plays center. He's one of the best they have. And it seems to always work every single time. So I don't know why you would go away from that, especially they went for it on 4th down there. So they should know that they're going to take 2 shots from there. You telling me Tebow gets stood up twice on 3rd and 1 and 4th and 1? Absolutely not. But if you throw away a 3rd down play, then you do only get 1 chance at it. And Tebow really had to make a play on that 4th down to pick up that yard. He almost didn't get it.
That's exactly what I was about to say. If you know you have 2 chances to run Tebow up the middle, you run him twice.
Right.
I haven't taken math in a while, but I know there's some probability multiplication in there that works out pretty well in your favor.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that. All right, so we talked about the offense.
Well, I have one more thing.
Go ahead.
Okay, we heard a lot about this bonsai offense, this hurry-up offense, and they've been running this half-assed version of the bonsai, the bonds maybe, for a while. And it's like
the bow.
They don't huddle. They get up to the line, and then they audible twice, and they all stand up and look at the sideline, and they look back. What's the point? Huddle up and call your play. Get the right play. If you're going to run the hurry-up, then you have to do it with some confidence. And I think there's been a general lack of confidence in the play calling lately, in that you haven't seen a lot of creativity. And when the game's close, it is kind of a, whether it's their fault or not, a huge reliance on Tebow that they could stop if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And then this the hurry-up thing where, look, in 2007, I remember them scripting an entire drive at LSU, and things went pretty well. I mean, at a certain point, you have to think, we're good enough to force our will on this defense. We're going to run our plays. We're going to make them do what we want them to do, and we're going to get what we want out of it. And with the hurry-up offense, I feel like that's what they should do. They have plenty of options with it. You got all those running backs. You got Tebow. You got a couple receivers who can make plays. You could do a lot with that hurry-up offense that they're not doing. They're just getting up there and wasting time. They're hurrying up so they can stand at the line for longer. And we still see cases where they either get a delay of game, call a timeout to avoid a delay of game, or run up right against the clock. And that's pretty ridiculous to me that with pretty much running the same offense for all these years, they've had this problem every year. Every year, Florida is near the bottom of the NCAA in penalties. And that's something that really bothers me. I don't understand it.
Yeah, the bonsai is ridiculous because the whole bonsai is predicated on getting to the line so that the defense can't make substitutions and running your play quickly, or at least having that threat so that they can't sub out. And every single time, they hurry up to the line of scrimmage, and then, like you said, they look at the sideline, they audible, they check out of plays, and all of a sudden, you know, the play clock's winding down, and you didn't do anything. The defense did get to rest. You know, you need to get up there and at least snap it quick a couple times a game. Especially, I mean, like we said, the play calling's not been creative. How long does it have to take for you to look to the sideline and say, okay, we're running that dive play that we just ran 20 times in a row? Like, get it up there. You want to catch the defense off guard, snap it, hand it off, and let them run again, because the way that they're doing this just doesn't make sense. I mean, it's okay for them to do it like this, I suppose, as opposed to the huddle, but it's just not what they're saying it is. It's not catching the defense off guard. It's not getting, you know, not giving them a chance to substitute. It's really just weird watching them run it over and over again like this.
Yeah, I mean, I would put this in the category of things that just haven't worked out, similar to the I formation. I
Joe Hayden Wildcat.
Yeah, the Joe Hayden Wildcat. I say if you can't do it right, just huddle up, get your play in, go that way. There's no use of going up to the line audibling like four or five times.
I would kind of like to see Moody get the ball in the I form a couple times. It doesn't have to be something they rely on, but I would like to give him a head of steam and a good opportunity to pick his hole coming out of the I form. I mean, he still does it out of the shotgun reasonably well, but I'd like to see them do that every once in a while. But that would require them having faith in Moody, which is something they definitely don't have. I mean, you see key drives where Moody isn't even standing up on the sideline next to Kenny Carter. He's, like, behind the backup fullback on the sideline. Like, there's no like, consideration of putting in Moody.
I don't know if we want to revisit this real quick, but I believe you.
I definitely don't want to revisit this, except to say that I don't think they can pass well out of that formation, so it would be painfully obvious whenever they switch to that, especially with Moody, that they're just going to run the ball most of the time. But I do agree on the Moody front in general that it's pathetic that he's only getting 3 carries, 2 carries, 5 carries, 4 carries. The guy is a good runner. He has proven to be a really good runner these last few games. He secured the ball. He only had one fumble this season. I really don't understand why they're going away from him, and I think he's definitely passed Rainey as, in my opinion, the number two option, yet Rainey doubles him up in carries all the time, and I really think this is something the coaches need to start answering to because, you know, you'll hear questions in practice, are you trying to get Emmanuel Moody more involved? And their generic response is, we're trying to get everyone more involved. But it's really just sad that you have a weapon like that that's going completely unused, because he is a weapon.
He might be the only guy on the team who, if you're trying to get a compliment about a guy from a coach, he'll compliment everyone else at the same time. Like, no one will ever just give Emmanuel Moody a compliment like he's doing well, except the Monday press conference after the LSU game, there were some Moody compliments that didn't come with any qualifications, and that's the first time that I've seen that happen.
Yeah, and he seemingly does well pretty much every time he touches the ball. There's no reason. He hasn't done anything on the field that would make him not, like, be a valuable asset.
This goes back to our conspiracy theory a week or two ago.
Is there just an anti-Moody, like, does Urban just have his guys, and if you're not his guy, like, that's it?
They're trying to keep his attitude in check. They're not going to pump him up in the media.
I think we have to start looking at stuff like that at this point. There's no real logical football reason why he doesn't seem to touch the ball. And you even see it, you know, I'm not going to roll with public opinion all the time as a reason to do something, but I wouldn't exactly say Moody was like public superstar, like everyone loved him or anything. And even now, like, the outcry for Moody is huge with everyone.
He had a 1 yard run and it was like an explosion of moves from the stadium.
But I think everyone's itching for it, and that's not necessarily the reason to do anything, especially for the coaches, but it just shows how everyone's kind of seeing the same thing here, that Moody needs to touch the ball more, and he's just simply not for some reason.
Like, I would say that, you know, Urban's just, like, loyal to his guys. This is the same reason why David Nelson hasn't produced all year, but he's still in the starting lineup. It says from the freshman, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the receivers, the decision's going to have to be made in the next week or two on Carl Moore. He's had a back injury. He's been out for the year. I saw enough from him in the spring to think that he could be good. I'm not saying he's going to be awesome, but I'm saying, like, in the way that Riley Cooper is probably, like, a really good number two receiver who's being used as a number one, Carl Moore could be a pretty solid number two receiver beside him. He'd definitely be better than what they're using right now. If you have the chance to bring Carl Moore back, say, with 3-4 games left in the regular season, do you do that, or do you save him for next year when the cupboard's still going to be pretty bare at receiver?
I definitely save him for next year. You're not going to – the difference between him and Cooper is, like, negligible.
Well, no.
Him and, like, who the second guy is, the DT or the David Nelson. I mean, he might be good, but I say there's no reason to waste him for, like, 3 or 4 games. You can get a whole year out of him, you know, in the future.
I mean, I do think Deontay would be – either Deontay or Carl Moore, whichever one of those guys is going to be covered by, like, the third best guy on the other team secondary, becomes a lot more dangerous than they are now.
I don't have a strong opinion on this. I can kind of see both arguments. I'm not impressed with Carl Moore just because we've seen him for an entire season and he really didn't do much. I know he was hurt and missed a couple games, but he played near a full season. But I do agree with you that pretty much anything is better than than David Nelson right now or even Deontay Thompson. He had a huge catch, but again, one catch for Deontay Thompson. So I don't know if it's a combination, and like we said, a lot of this falls on Tebow not getting them the ball. I think they actually played one of their better games with the exception of the Riley Cooper drop. But again, this was a bad secondary and a team that you're supposed to torch. Even though they put up 255 yards of passing, that's Arkansas's average of allowing for passing yardage. So I think they did okay in this game. But back to the Carl Moore argument, I could see that you doing either way. If you think he's going to help you win a championship this year, I'd burn him for this year and let him go out there and help you win. If you feel like he's not, then yeah, you might as well get a full season out of him next year.
I think you're better off giving those like plays or maybe that spot to Amarius Hines or Frankie Hammond.
We haven't seen those guys do anything. And at least in the spring, I don't know how much you guys watched Carl Moore in the spring. He looked good. Like, he actually looked like a legitimate receiver. Now, yeah, last year, you guys made the joke about how he's always the intended receiver.
Carl Moore, the intended receiver.
And that was very correct. He was a clown last year on the field. He looked like a different guy in the spring. And I think with junior college guys, a lot of times you have to give them a little bit of leeway. Yeah, logic tells you they're older. They've been playing college football somewhere, so they should step in and be ready to go. But, I mean, Troy Epps didn't do anything last year either. He was hurt and couldn't crack the depth chart. And this year, he's producing. I mean,
As far as him looking good in the spring, I mean, that's cool. He looked good in the spring. It's fine. A lot of guys look good in the spring. And I don't want Amarius Hines lumped in with Frankie Hammond anymore because you're right. Frankie Hammond has not shown anything. Him and TJ Lawrence haven't shown anything when they've been out there. Amarius Hines has, though. He played in those early games, and he was a very big target for John Brantley. He was making guys miss. He was running physical after the catch. He was getting open. I think Amarius Hines has proven to be the best of those three, and I think he should just get a shot. I'm not projecting him to be great. I don't even claim to know what you will get out of him if you give him a chance. I just know that he has shown that he can look good on the field in a real game, and that he can at least do nothing out there. I have confidence in him to not go out there and start tackling his own guys, because that's pretty much what you'd have to do less than David Nelson. So I say just give him a chance, throw him out there, and if it doesn't work, just go back to David Nelson. You're not going to lose anything. Just give the kid a shot.
Do they play the same position?
I don't want to get into this argument either, but I don't know for sure. But if not, move some guys around, do what you got to do. I think Deontay could be better in the slot anyway, and then leave Amarius Hines on the outside if you need to do that.
Right, the other thing you got to think about with Carl Moore, too, is that he hasn't played all year. So if he does come back, is he ready to play? And is he really going to be productive?
It would have to. I mean, obviously, this all rests on him. I'm saying if he's
even
able
if he's
to
healthy,
play,
though, he hasn't played football all year.
Well, I'm saying if he's healthy and you get and he's like ready, he's like game ready for football, and you can get like three regular season games and your postseason out of him. Do you do that or do you save him for next year? That was my question. Like, do you think it would make enough of a difference to bring him in?
I say you save him. I don't think you're gaining that much by putting him in there.
Okay. Any last thoughts on the offense before we switch off of this?
Or are we still talking about the Arkansas game?
Yeah. I was going to go into the defense on the Arkansas game.
Go right away.
Okay, so we all know the Florida defense has been great, but, you know, they let up 20 points in this game, not entirely their fault, which we'll get into. But, you know, the thing that would probably strike Florida fans and people around the country the most is just the big plays that Arkansas was able to generate. Dennis Johnson had runs of 42, 25, and 18 yards. They went down the field in the air to Greg Childs twice, 46 yards at the end of the first half, 75 on the busted coverage. What did you see out of this Florida defense that was a little bit different, and what were you guys shocked at the amount of big plays that Arkansas was able to generate?
Joker package, which is my boy. I love the Joker package. We've been going hard for a couple weeks now. Joker package was trash on Saturday, and it got worked by Dennis Johnson mostly. You know, they're a little thin at defensive tackle, and I guess that kind of lent them toward running it a little bit more. Plus, Arkansas is a big passing team. Now, I thought, and probably a lot of people thought, if they're going to be running the Joker package all day against Arkansas, they're going to score like three defensive touchdowns because they've made so many plays out of that. Arkansas, not even having Michael Smith, their top tailback, running Dennis Johnson the whole time, also down their best receiver, Joe Adams, who had a stroke. Both those guys out, and they still pretty much worked the Joker package. I mean, and I think, Kyle, you were saying, like, you know, a lot of these teams come out and they're just going to give up on third down and just run up the middle. And then the Joker package hasn't been great at containing the run, so they just break a long run and convert.
The thing I want to say about the Joker while we're on the subject is just that not every third and long is a passing down or certainly a throw it down the field down. Like, I know that my argument's slightly hurt by the 75-yard touchdown on 3rd and 17, but I would say that was just a matter of the coverage being completely blown on that play. But what I do want to say is that when teams are getting into 3rd and 15, 3rd and 17, 3rd and 20, whatever the down and distance may be, I think a lot of times they're willing to just give up. They're willing to run a screen play. They're willing to run a draw play. They're willing to just hand the ball off and play field position. And the Joker's actually creating opportunities in the run game on those long downs and distance, or on the third and long down distances, for them to just run for a huge amount of yards. On the first touchdown that Arkansas scored after Tebow fumbled in their own territory, there was like a third and 15 play that went for a huge run on the ground, and then Ryan Mallon converted the quarterback sneak on fourth and short, and that allowed them to score a touchdown. Just come out there in your base defense, and I think you can get a good enough pass rush with the guys that you have, and that way you can guard yourself a little bit against the run. If it's second and long, or if it's third and eight or something where you know they're going to pass for it, that's when I think you should use it. But I think maybe third and 15, you need to kind of play it a little bit safer.
Yeah, you don't have to have all these crazy blitz schemes to get pressure when you have Jermaine Cunningham and Carlos Dunlap at defensive end. I mean, those guys can get the job done. I do think I want to watch the game again. I have it on DVR. It's a magical thing. The linebackers did not look like they played great to me, and part of that is because Brandon Spikes had that groin injury that he sustained against LSU, which makes his game there even more impressive.
Absolutely.
And then came out early in this game. On Arkansas, one of their drives down deep into Florida territory, I think their first touchdown, Spikes and A.J. Jones were both on the sideline, mm-hmm. and this is like a goal line stand type situation. Mm-hmm. You can't have that happen. And the earliest big play that came from Dennis Johnson, where he broke through the left side of the line on a third down. I mean, when you have three defensive linemen, you got three down linemen, if they're going to run the ball, they're going to make a hole on the D-line, and the linebackers have to be there to make the play. Now, Ryan Stamper, as much as I love Ryan Stamper, totally messed up on the first big run by Dennis Johnson, where he over-pursued by a mile, then tried to make some kind of arm tackle, and Dennis Johnson's built like a Mack truck, so he blew by him. It's really, if you're going to run against the Joker package, it's going to have to be the linebackers that get there. They're the line of defense, really, mm-hmm. against a run. I didn't think they played that well.
And I mean, let's just point out, the defense didn't play great, but this is all on them. I mean, four turnovers. They're out there pretty much the entire game. It's, you know, they're going to wear down a little bit.
But before I definitely want to get into that. One more thought on the run, though. What you're talking about is 100% true. I mean, they're just hurt by Spikes not being in there, because he's probably their best run stopper, but more so than any of the defensive tackles they're trotting out there. And you're just kind of downgrading at every position against the run. So, you know, you move Stamper inside. Stamper's a good player, but he's not Brandon Spikes, especially against the run. Brandon Hicks, who I love a lot, was out there, but he's a pass, more of a
Dustin,
pass.
Dustin Doe was playing for Spikes.
Right, Dustin Doe. Yeah, Dustin Doe and Brandon Hicks were the two guys playing on the outside when A.J. Jones and Spikes were both out of the game. And at least Hicks is more of a pass defense type guy. You can bring him off the edge. You can drop him into coverage. But he's not a great linebacker against the run. Dustin Doe, same thing. So I think they just lost at every position, where Stamper is normally a great number two linebacker against the run. It was kind of on his shoulders, and he, you know, missed a couple plays.
I mean, one other thing about the run is, though, too, I think not linebacker, but the defensive front, those two defensive tackles just aren't, you know, they aren't great. They're right. Kind of weak there. March has been out. I mean, Hunter and Epps have been doing all right, but they're just getting gashed up the middle. I mean, Hardesty today, and now Johnson.
Yeah, in defense of them, there were a lot of injuries. Jay Howard and Lawrence Marsh both did not play at all, so Omar Hunter and Terrence Sanders were forced to take, you know, pretty much all the snaps when they were in there. They got Epps in there a little bit as well. But, you know, they need a better rotation in there to clog the run. And a guy like Omar Hunter, he's kind of learning on the fly. This is his first year really contributing at all. So I'll give them a little bit of a break. But obviously defensive tackle is not their strong suit. Now, back to what Defer said, the defense did give up a lot of points. But they're really the offense, with all the turnovers and stuff like that in the first half, they're being put in a tough position every week by this offense to go out there and really just stop the other team on their own.
3 of 6 in the red zone is really bad, too, from the offense. That's that is the worst thing to me. That and turnovers. When you get in the red zone, you got to get some points, even if it's just a field goal. And I think Caleb Sturgis showed this week he's actually kind of a weapon of a kicker, hitting a 51-yard field goal and handling the game winner pretty calmly. You got to get points when you're in the red zone. You can't turn the ball over with the kind of careless mistakes they made, where they just weren't focused. I don't understand how you come out in a game like this when all week everyone's asking you about it being a trap game like Ole Miss was, and them saying, no, it's not a trap game, we learned from that, and then coming out and playing as if it's a trap game because they're not focused and they're not holding the ball the way they should be and they're fumbling. And the one where Tebow had it knocked out of his hands, he brought it back real low and real far. He totally Byron Leftwich that, got it knocked out of his hand. So, I mean, that was all pretty bad. I don't know. I feel like for most of, like, the preseason, I was, like, had lower expectations than everyone else did. Like, I was not as high on Florida as everyone else was. And now everyone's, like, flipped sides, and now I'm, like, the optimist. I'm the homer. Because I still feel like, I mean, I feel like, yeah, all the pressure's on the defense, but I feel like this is a defensive team. Like, that's the mentality of this team, is that they're going to play defense and try and control the ball, not turn it over, and not screw up in the red zone as much as they did. And they should win just about every game. I mean, I don't see any huge problems until the Alabama game.
I mean, yeah, I agree with you. But the problem for me is just that it's nice for Urban Meyer to say after games, like, well, we're just going to lean on that defense, lean on that defense, lean on that defense. But if you can help them out, you need to help them out. You can't just keep making their life as hard as humanly possible. Like you said, they couldn't convert in the red zone. They couldn't put points on the board. And eventually, the defense is going to have a game like this where they play well, but not extraordinarily well. They just did a good job, not a great job. And they could have lost as a result because they didn't get any help from the offense in the first half. And in fact, the offense was practically playing against them in the first half, especially setting them up on a short field for that touchdown and just making them trot back out on the field without getting much of a rest when you had guys who were injured on that side of the ball.
But, I mean, what are you really going to do about that? I think they've proven they're not that explosive of a team like they were last year. I think they're going to run the ball. Tebow's going to carry the ball. Dempsey's going to carry the ball. And they're going to play defense.
But that's
kind of
not
MO.
As much. The problem is fumbling right. and not scoring in the red zone. And I think this is
really
the
first. I mean,
really
the fumbles
the
are like, that's just. That's a one-game
thing. It's unacceptable.
No, it's not a one-game thing, though, because against Troy, they put the ball on the ground three times. They've had various fumbles throughout the season. They're fumbling the ball a lot this year.
But among their, like, I mean, no disrespect to Troy, but, like, Troy wasn't going to win that game. But the games, you know, Tennessee, Kentucky, LSU, and this game, this was the first game where I felt like they should and could have lost. I mean, right. The other ones, this is mostly because of the defense playing so well, were not a threat to score when they needed to. I mean, those three teams could not get it done when they needed to. Arkansas did. And a lot of that is a product of the offense just turning it over as much as they did and tiring out the defense. But I feel like if the defense plays their usual game and the offense doesn't totally wet themselves like they did this weekend, Florida really is still in pretty good shape. Right. And the way I look at it, they get the same kind of – now, I'm not saying they're going to go on a run like they went on last year, but the Ole Miss game clearly sparked something in this team and gave them a little bit of a wake-up call. I feel like they get the same kind of notice from this game, and they didn't lose.
Well, going back to the Troy – yeah, Troy obviously wasn't going to win that game. I was just pointing out that they
right,
have put the ball on the ground a lot this year, you know, regardless of circumstance. I do agree with you. I was certainly huge on Florida. I predict them to win the national championship and go undefeated prior to the season. And the reason I was because of the defense, not because of the offense. I thought the defense had a chance to be one of the best defenses of all time. I foolishly predict a shutout seemingly every week. I have infinite confidence in them. But I didn't realize the offense was going to struggle like they have. I think the offense has been much worse than I expected coming into this year. And if you just look at the point totals against teams that they played last year versus this year, I know teams can change in a year, but it's really a little bit remarkable to see the points they put up against LSU, Kentucky, and Arkansas, and Tennessee last year versus this year. The discrepancy is almost twice as many points last year. So some of that is a matter of circumstance. Losing Percy Harvin hurts you a lot, but I just think the offense has been a massive disappointment. But we all thought the defense would be good enough to carry them, and I think it will through the rest of the season.
I'm still not that low. I mean, this is the time of the year last year where things really exploded and got out of hand, where they just went nuts on everyone. And, I mean, the Kentucky game, they played it earlier in the year this year than they did last year. And in the first quarter of that game, they looked incredible. I mean, that was the kind of offense you kind of expect from them, where it's going to be mostly on the ground, but they're going to get it done. And still, I mean, their passing yards are pretty much on par with what they were last year per game. They don't look as dangerous, for sure. But it's not like there's been a huge drop-off in production. The biggest problems are just the red zone and turnover.
But if you look at the stats, they're skewed a little bit because the first two games that they got this year were Charleston Southern and Troy versus last year was Hawaii and Miami, two huge upgrades against those two teams. And they put up big passing yards against Charleston Southern and Troy. I think if you just look at the SEC games, that's where this is really becoming a problem. Like, coming into this week, 134 yards against LSU was the most passing yards they had through the air. And they didn't pass for a lot of yards at the beginning of last year, but that's because they didn't have to. They were just, you know, they were scoring a lot of points anyway with the run game. I think now it's a situation where I'm not so sure that they can have a consistent passing game if that's what it takes. They can make a big play through the passing game like they did with Deontay Thompson, but I'm not so sure that can be the way that they methodically go down and move the ball drive after drive.
Yeah, I feel like they only need the passing game when they need it, I guess. Like, I feel like the defense is good enough and the run game should be good enough. We talked about all the reasons why it's not right now, but it should be. that they don't need a huge passing game. They don't have the tools that they had last year. I mean, they lost a lot. I still think they have guys who can be productive. If they face a team that has, like, two outrageously good cover men in the secondary, like two Eric Berries that shut down Aaron Hernandez and Riley Cooper, now is going to be interesting. I'd really like to see what happens in that case. We'd find out a lot about this team and about the receiving core. I mean, I feel like those two guys are good enough options. Riley Cooper seems like he should be getting hurt soon, doesn't he?
Right? It's about that time.
Yeah, that time happened a couple weeks ago. I'm surprised it hasn't yet. If that happens, they got real big problems. But for now, I'm not terribly worried about it. I still think they should win the SEC. I think the Alabama game, we're going to talk about them soon, is going to be awesome. But the national championship, I don't know. They've got some work to do. All the best team of all time talk that was thrown around a little bit before the year has certainly evaporated.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more red flags that come out of this last game than it was just a fluke and they dodged a bullet and this won't happen again. It was like a one-time thing. I think they pointed out a lot of deficiencies, especially on offense, that I don't think you're going to see the big bounce back like after the Mississippi game last year. Yeah. I think they're going to be winning games. Like, they're going to be scoring 20 points, 23 points. Like, I think that's it.
Well, yeah, I think this game at Mississippi State is probably going to be like the game at Arkansas last year. I mean, they were asleep at Arkansas for three quarters and then woke up at the end.
I think 20 or 23 points might be a little low, but I do agree that I don't think you see a huge bounce back. They are what they are, I think. I don't think it's a matter of players aren't making, you know, that they have the ability to put up a bunch of points and be dynamic on offense, and they're just not doing it. I think they can be more reliable, more consistent, where they're not turning the ball over, obviously. But I think this team is just worse offensively than we thought.
And I think you're going to see a closer game against Mississippi State than you think. I think they win probably comfortably in the end, but I think at least early maybe they give them a scare.
To me, that's only if they come out with the same lack of focus they had in this game. That means fumbles. That means turnovers. If they don't fumble four times, if they even fumble just once in this game, it might be a totally different game. The defense isn't as tired. You give yourself more opportunities to score. I'm not going to go as far as what we heard some people say, that they should have been up 31-0.
no one who works for us, yeah, by the way.
We won't name names. Yeah. If they do that against Mississippi State, sure, they're going to have problems. But if they're not turning the ball over all the time, I mean, the real difference to me right now, in, like, if you look at the point totals from last year to this year, the turnover margin is vastly different. I mean, they were crushing in turnover margin last year.
Right.
That's a really important stat.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the offense has really muddled that up. But if they don't turn the ball over like this, I think they should be fine.
I agree. The turnover margin is ridiculous. For them to be -2 for six games is absolutely unbelievable. But if Defer is right and the Mississippi State game is close, I think that this should be a huge alarming back-to-back weeks for them, because when you look at both Arkansas and Mississippi State, the first thing that I think is, all right, these teams are two teams who are offensive teams. Arkansas and Mississippi State, they're focusing on offense most of the time. Their defense is not that good. So you figure UF's great defense should be able to hold their good offense in check, if not shut them down entirely, and the offense should just have to do enough against these poor defenses to really just put the game away. And that wasn't the case this week, and it'll be interesting to see if the game goes down similar next week or if the offense is able to put the game away. I think they will, but I've had foolish confidence in this team for the last couple of weeks, so I don't really know. A group of people that didn't have foolish confidence in the Gators after this week, though, were the AP poll voters. Completely falling out of first place were the Florida Gators, and moving into first place were the Alabama Crimson Tide. What did you guys think about this move?
Wonderful. Florida deserved to be demoted after their performance, even though it's not like Alabama totally wiped the floor with South Carolina, but Florida showed some cracks that need to be addressed.
I mean, 1-2, it's pretty much negligible. It's an okay move for this week.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't matter at all, A, because it's early in the season, B, because the AP poll counts for nothing, and C, because these two teams will probably play each other later in the year. But for now, I think Alabama's just been more impressive. They've earned the number one ranking. Arkansas was a common opponent. The Crimson Tide smoked them. And I think also Alabama has maybe some more consistently better wins than Florida has to this point in the season. In the same breath, the first BCS poll also came out where Florida is number one. So any surprises in that poll? That I don't know if you guys have gotten the chance to look at it.
I mean, I haven't broken down the computer numbers yet, so you know, I don't know. But
the computer loves Iowa, from what I understand.
Really?
From what Phil tells
don't
me.
Don't we all?
I'm not a Ricky Stanzi guy.
Yeah, the running game's just so good.
Is it?
Yeah.
I argue there's nothing about Iowa that's so good.
Like, Iowa's Kirk fan. They'll probably end up in the Outback Bowl anyway, like they always do.
Right.
But, you know, it's a good story. Maybe they'll win the Big Ten.
Yeah, Iowa's third in the computer polls.
Yeah, they love them. I don't know why. I mean, Iowa's not a good team. I don't know. It's just the Big Ten for me. Like, I think that God forbid Iowa gets in the championship game. It's just what we've seen a million times, an SEC team absolutely destroying a Big Ten team.
All right, speaking of the Big Ten, though, what a horrible, horrible loss for Ohio State against a 1-5 Purdue team that lost to Northern Illinois. I mean, come on.
Good. It's a Big Ten. Whatever. I mean, it's, none of this. They're all horrible. Like, they're all equally horrible. They can do anything on any week. All
right. For a long time, I refused to buy into your dislike for Terrell Pryor and pushing his moving to wide receiver. I always thought Pryor was good. I always thought he could play. But if you watch any of the highlights of that game, he could barely throw. He was throwing up 30-yard Hail Marys, went straight up in the air. And the one one that DeVere Posey actually caught for a touchdown was a freaking accident. It got tipped. Look, I'm done with Pryor.
Okay, you shouldn't be. It's not his fault. It's Jim Tressel's fault because he should be playing wide receiver. He'd be a beast at wide receiver. They did it a couple times last year. He caught touchdowns for them. He's an athletic freak. You can run him off the edges, run him on some end rounds, some jet sweeps. But the kid's not a quarterback. I promise you that. He just can't play quarterback.
And if he plays receiver, then he can play basketball. Be a small forward. And be a terror.
And he can probably play at the next level if you let him play receiver. I mean, he's certainly going to be a guy who's converted if he goes to the NFL.
This all hurt me a little bit, but I'm sorry, Trey.
I'm starting to get really excited because all I want to see is Florida-USC in the Rose Bowl. I want to see it so bad just for the clash of the programs and for all of the fan stuff around the Rose Bowl. I think there's a chance it could happen.
Well, they'll be disappointed since it's going to be Florida and Boise State.
Absolutely.
Which me and Kyle want. So.
Because Oregon's going to knock off USC at home in a couple weeks here. And then that win over Oregon's just going to look better and better. The computers are just going to eat it up. And Boise's going to sneak in there. And it's a recession-proof title game because you only need two colors of confetti and two colors of paint to paint both of the end zones.
The orange and blue will be everywhere. It'll be disorienting.
God help us if that happens. We won't have to worry about deadline. We'll have our stories done in the third quarter.
Ouch. Or Boise State can pull it out at the end in dramatic fashion as they're want to do.
You take a team. Yeah, they can do that against a team that doesn't care about what bowl they're in. You take a team like USC that isn't even that great and give them a month to prepare for anyone. You got yourself a hell of a ball game.
They lose to Washington. At Washington.
Whoa.
Sorry. All right. Anyway, we strayed very far from where I wanted this talk to go. Let's get back to the rightful number one team in the nation right now in the AP poll, which is Alabama. They really looked impressive to me this point in the season. McElroy has proven to be a decent quarterback, maybe even a step up from John Parker Wilson. But Mark Ingram, their running back, has really proven to be one of the elite running backs and really players overall in the nation so far.
Yeah, he's been great. He's been doing pretty much everything. He goes right through the middle. He's big. He's strong. He's fast. He can score touchdowns. He can catch a little bit. He's been a great player.
I think it says a lot about Alabama and Nick Saban's recruiting that they lose Glenn Coffey and they lose John Parker Wilson, their starting running back and their starting quarterback, and they look 100 times better on offense. I mean, you took out Glenn Coffey, who's in the NFL right now, second on a depth chart, getting some carries with Frank Gore being out for the 49ers, and all of a sudden you just plug in Mark Ingram, you plug in Trent Richardson, and their running game's really just been incredible.
Ingram already has 900 yards. His last three games went for 140, 172, and 246.
Yeah, he's on a tear right now.
And really the most impressive thing about Alabama, to me at least, is that they're pretty much deep and talented at every position. They're just incredibly balanced. They can throw Julio Jones. Ingram can run the ball. Their defense is good. They got a great defensive front with Terrence Cody. The secondary is good. They're just solid everywhere.
His worst game against Arkansas, 2.7 yards a carry. Those Razorbacks are getting it done.
they stop the run. They can't stop the pass. They stop the run. All right, so Mark Ingram has looked absolutely incredible, leading him to the highest honor in all the land. No, not a national recognition for Player of the Week, not an SEC recognition for Player of the Week, but he becomes the first player in history to receive unanimous number one votes in the Alligator Sports Heisman Watch from all five of our writers. That's right, all of us agreed on something for the first time ever. It's going to run in the paper tomorrow. But we all have Mark Ingram number one. He was not listed on a single one of our ballots last week. So what led you guys to make this jump?
Yeah, it's a miracle that we all agreed. But honestly, at least for me, I looked at his numbers. I had kind of chalked up Alabama just being a good overall team, and I hadn't looked a lot at his individual numbers. When you do, and when you watch him play, he's just really a great player. The numbers are there. He's leading the nation, and I'm not sure he's leading the nation, but he's up at the top in rushing touchdowns.
He's not leading in any.
Yeah.
But he is near the top in all of them. McCall, what did you see out of him that led you to put him number one?
He's good.
He's good.
I like a mixture of stats, wins, and performances in big games. And especially lately, he's been all that. So
yeah, I know for me, he was he was like a fringe guy for me on my last ballot. I had him around 6, 7, 8 in that range. just off my ballot. And then this last game just really put him over the top. 250 yards, I think, was a school record, I believe, in this last game against South Carolina. Yeah. I don't know that 100%, but
I'd expect Alabama to have some pretty lofty.
You would, but I was shocked to hear it. It was some kind of record for Alabama. I don't remember what the exact circumstances were, but he's really just an incredible back. He's getting a ton of yards per carry. He's punching the ball in the end zone, and he leapt to the top of all of our ballots. Somebody who's fallen off of all of our ballots, surprisingly to some, not so surprisingly to us, it's a stadium record for rushing yards.
Stadium record.
Okay, there you go. So the truth shall be known on this podcast. Stadium record. We had our facts checked. What's the guy from Around the Horn's name?
Stat boy, Tony Reale.
Tony Reale ran that in for us. But anyway, somebody who fell off is Colt McCoy. None of us showing any love for Colt McCoy this week. I've been crusading for this for the past few weeks. Defer, what broke your back on Colt McCoy?
This pains me to do so. I almost left him on out of spite, but I decided against it. I mean, he like you said before, the picks are just a problem. He didn't look great against Oklahoma. I mean, even going, Brevin Bradford goes down that game, and even against, in comparison with Landry Jones, he hasn't been at his best this year.
I'm open to bringing him back if he can.
I'm open to bringing anyone back.
Yeah, I mean, he's like not that far off the board for me right now. He just needs to turn it around right now. Also, Stephen Sheffield was tempting to me, even though he missed.
Yeah, he played like two games.
He missed the first four games. Dude's already got over 1,000 yards.
He missed
passing
the first four games. He wasn't the starter.
I know. He's already got over 1,000 yards passing, man. I love him. That's awesome.
A lot of guys have 1,000 yards passing.
If he has like two more like 500 yards, six touchdown games, how could you not at least consider him? That's incredible.
How many games does he actually play? Is it two or three?
I think three.
So, this is a joke. Texas Tech players should just not be up for this award. If you're a Texas Tech quarterback, unless you play like, if you got 1,000 yards through three games, like, it's a joke.
I mean, I completely disagree with D for the Texas Tech players shouldn't be up for this award. But I mean, he's only played a few games. Taylor Potts was their guy earlier in the year, so we needed more out of him, and I don't think he's played enough to warrant getting this at the end of the year.
Let me guess: is he the most NFL ready quarterback that Texas Tech's ever had?
He's the latest most NFL ready, I guess. All right, so transitioning out of there, we're going to do our weekly awards, our Kyle Jackson Bad Angle of the Week, and our Reggie Nelson's Excellence in the Field of Sport, something like that. I don't know. It's convoluted, but that's how we like it here at the Alligator Sports Podcast. So we'll start with our Reggie Nelson's, and we'll go to Mike McCall first.
My Reggie goes to the AP poll voters for bumping Florida down one, having the courage to do so, the courage that voters don't seem to have in the Heisman poll. Of actually looking at things and figuring out where everyone stands, so good move.
Defer?
All right, well, my Reggie Nelson is going to my iPhone because it really got me out of a jam earlier last week. I had a book quiz on a book that I did not own and did not read. I brought the iPhone to class. I read the passages on a PDF right before the quiz and got 100. Thank you, iPhone.
Is that a confirmed 100?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. It was multiple choice. It was multiple choice. I was sure they were right. But you wouldn't know since you skipped class that day.
That's absolutely correct. But my Reggie Nelson is going to go to a great man, Ted Spiker, our professor for that very class that I skipped. But he's also my professor for a magazine publication class. And usually I have back-to-back three-hour blocks on Thursdays with this great man. But he's going out of town this week, canceled them both. So my week wide open schedule-wise, and I don't even have to skip class this week. So my Reggie Nelson goes to you, Professor Spiker. Thanks for doing us all a favor.
All he really did was save you some guilt.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah, the result's the same. It's just I don't feel bad about not going this time. Anyway, our Kyle Jackson all started off, I guess. Mine goes to a player very close to Defer's heart. Anytime I can take a stab at Defer while giving my Kyle Jackson, I will take that opportunity. Jake Locker, Washington quarterback. I don't bet on games, but if I did, I would have taken a look at the landscape this week and I would have said, hey, Kentucky at Auburn, plus 400, that's a little steep. Hey, Washington at Arizona State, plus 225. Yeah, you know, it might be worth throwing a couple bucks on those two teams in a parlay that, you know, let's just say it was 75 bucks on five. And Kentucky, they got it done. They knocked him off. I look like a genius. Washington,
I would have looked
like a genius, right? But I didn't bet. I didn't tell anyone. I'm just coming up with this now. But then Washington, who I thought was the sure thing, if I would have bet this, they went on the road to Arizona State. Locker scores 17 points at Arizona State. 17 points. And they lose because the defense blows coverage on a Hail Mary. I don't even know how that happens. You don't even cover the deep end of the field. And Kyle's heart is broken. just like it would have been if I would have bet on Steven Garcia against Georgia earlier in the week, in the year.
Look, you don't just walk into Sun Devil Stadium and like come out with a win. It doesn't just happen like that. So, you know, this is no way Jake's fault. You put all this misplaced hate should go on the Washington defense that gave up the Hail Mary. Not Jake. Jake did his job.
Jake's the leader of that team. He only scored 17 points. And I'm sick of the entire nation, including you, D, for you spearhead this movement. People look to you for their Washington support. They're the most overrated, oversupported 2-4 team in the history of the world. They're not good. I said after they beat USC, it proves nothing because bad teams beat USC all the time. And I was right. Like, say it, I was right.
Yeah, look, Coach Sark's got them moving in the right direction. They're a bowl Sark's team. They're a bowl team this year.
Are they?
Yeah,
they got to do some work to get into a bowl.
Like, I know we don't bet here, but if we did, I would definitely bet on Washington being a bowl team.
Well, they got some work to do. They got to go 4-2 down the stretch.
Just shake hands right now. I just want to see you shake hands.
Deeper, you want to shake hands on this?
Yeah. You're not betting.
We're not betting, but say we put like five. Say if we did that, maybe we'd put $5 on the fact that Washington's a bowl team. Even though neither of us would do that. And say if we did that, we would shake hands on it right now.
All right. Well, I would love to shake hands on a bet that we're not going to make on air, but I actually think they may make a bowl. I don't know. All your guys' foolish talk leads me to believe they may be able to go 4-2 down the stretch. But what kind of accomplishment is that? They were supposed to be this good team. They're ranked in the top 25. You were saying go Huskies on air.
Go
Huskies. 6-6 team is go Huskies.
I stick to go Huskies. They won no games last season, so a bowl game's a huge turnaround for them.
They're not Vanderbilt, dude. They're Washington. A bowl game shouldn't mean, like, the world to them.
All your pro-Washington talk is you trying to repay the city of Seattle for jumping off the Seattle Sounders bandwagon, who qualified for the playoffs this weekend. That's right. And when you mentioned Steven Garcia, you made me think of my new favorite thing to watch for during college football games, especially when you're on mute. When they show highlights of someone, and, like, the screen flashes, and, like, that flashy intro comes in, and their name pops up, and it, like, flashes across, and it's, like, Steven Garcia. They're like, oh, he must have had a good game. And they show it, and it's him, like, freaking out in the pocket, getting sacked, throwing it into the bench. Someone in the crowd catches it. That's my new favorite thing, is when you don't know what's going to happen, and it's, like, it comes up, and it's, like, Ryan Mallett. And then it's him, like, flopping around on the ground. It's the best thing ever. I don't know why they don't just put, like, Alabama defense and then show them sacking Steven Garcia. They make it look like he did something awesome and then show him totally wetting himself.
I don't know. They're trying to draw attention. Like, he's the headliner, I guess. So whatever he does is news. But anyway, transitioning away from Jake Locker and the pathetic Washington Huskies. McCall, you want to give out your Kyle Jackson here?
Yeah, I guess so, since Defer can't come up with one. all right. I don't know where I need to direct my anger most here. I guess I could go partly at Maurice Sendak, partly at Hollywood, partly at society in general, and partly at children and the standards that they have set for literature in this country. Where the wild things are, and I didn't know this from, I didn't remember it that much from my childhood, because I had taste, I guess. Everyone Poops was one of my favorites.
It's no Goodnight Moon.
Yeah, Goodnight Moon.
Who moved my cheese, or what was that?
Give a mouse a cookie.
Yeah, no, give a mouse a cookie. Well, I remember that. I remember that, and that's not at all what Kyle was trying to bring up there. But, okay, Where the Wild Things Are, crappy book. I'm sorry if you like this, but if you like this, you're an idiot. It's three sentences long. All that happens is he gets sent to his room, he has a dream, and then he eats. That's it. That's Where the Wild Things Are. Now, great illustrations. Maurice Sendak was basically like an illustrator who decided to string some sentences together and put this book out. So I guess I shouldn't really blame him. He just cashed in on this. I want to start writing children's books now that I see how easy it is. But then someone decides to make this into a major motion picture. Now, the costume designer, I had to go see this weekend. My parents came up, and they took me and my brother to see it. Costume designers, A+. Great job. The casting director, great job. I'll even throw the kid a bone for a great acting job. It was a very well-made movie. My problem is that people call this book an American classic, and no one bats an eye. There's no questioning that this book is in the pantheon of the great American children's literature. It's no better than any other kid's book. They're all stupid, and the movie, this is my beef with the movie, is the message that it leaves children when they leave the theater. I guess this could count as a spoiler, but there's no plot really to the movie, so it doesn't matter. It doesn't really follow the book.
The book's been out for years. It's all right.
Well, it doesn't really follow the book, because if it followed the book, it'd be about 3 minutes long. So basically, this kid bites his mom. He's a total brat. He ruins her date. He's screaming. And then he runs away down the street, and he runs into the woods. And then he goes into this, like, dream, probably cocaine-induced dream, where he's like, he's on a boat, he goes off to the land where the wild things are, he becomes their king, they're fighting, whatever. And I guess each of the monsters is supposed to represent a part of his psyche and help him figure out that what he did was wrong and bad. And so he finally gets homesick and goes home. He gets there, his mom's not even out looking for him, she's just in the house. She looks distraught, but she's not trying, because this kid's a brat, you don't want him back. And
Then he sits down. She feeds him. They look at each other. There's a pause. And I'm like, he's going to say either I'm sorry or I love you, right? Because the kid's a brat and he has to say I'm sorry. He doesn't say I'm sorry. The movie just ends. It's all cool. Kids leave the theater like, oh, man, you can be a total a-hole and get away with it. And you don't have to say you're sorry. Say you're sorry. If that happened in my house, that kid would have been beaten senseless and locked in a closet. You can't act like that. And you certainly can't act like that, have a magical adventure, and then not apologize to your mom. It's totally ridiculous.
You can act like that and then not have a magical adventure, or you can have a magical adventure and not act like that, but not both. You can't have your cake and eat it, too.
And you have to apologize. You have to apologize. Why do you not have to apologize? It's so ridiculous.
And you were ranting about this last night when we went to get pizza, and I believe you made the comment that you'd be pissed if your child had a magical adventure.
After acting like that, yeah. If you act like that, you don't deserve a magical adventure. I'm sorry.
I mean, you should have to earn your magical adventures. They're a privilege, not a
right. So the kids watching this now are thinking... Children. The kids now are thinking, when I act like that, it's all good. This is going to happen. I mean, they take movies and run with it. I did when I was a kid. That's ridiculous.
All right, so what we learned from that is McCall's version of the movie would have involved child services, and Colt McCoy is the Where the Wild Things Are of the college football scene.
Not child services. It would have involved a boarding school. It's not the mom's fault. They don't need to come take the kid away and put him in a foster home. He needs to be sent to a military academy and beaten into shape.
Well, I heard you were going to beat him into shape. That's why I said that. But anyway, enough about beating small children. Deifer, have you worked out a Kyle Jackson in your head yet?
This is really sad. I got nothing. I'm going to give it to Mike, I guess, for hating children.
I'm going to give it to you for your low standards. Right. You're ruining education in this country, single-handedly.
Like, if the children want to enjoy the magical adventure and not say they're sorry?
They can't. No. Kids can enjoy it. Kids can love that book. They can love it up. But they can't grow up and call it a classic. And no one should call it a classic because it's not a classic. It's garbage.
Didn't it win that? What's that award they give those children?
Let it in is garbage. Yeah.
So, once again, this falls on Deifer's love for potential and not actualization of that potential. And
the Vernon
Davis
of books.
I'd like to call attention to the fact that we just had a first on the Alligator Sports podcast. Deifer failed to come up with a Kyle Jackson or Reggie Nelson for the first time
in
history. You're the people's champ, Deifer. You gotta have something for him.
All right, let me dig down here. I got one.
So you're going to get an automatic Kyle from everyone if you don't. It's team-wide Kyle.
I got it. Now, you guys might disagree with this, and I'm going to call you right, Gator Girl. I'm giving it to the people who left halfway through OAR's performance. Now, granted...
So not Adam Berry, our usual host, because he was there screaming his lungs out.
Wait, he loved him so much he can't speak today.
He had it painted on his chest, OAR.
He had the band signed his chest after the game.
Now, look, the music was good. It was well-performed. People didn't know all the songs. Maybe that's on the people who chose, like, the band for Gator Girl. But, look, you don't just walk out. There's a mass exodus after, like, the first 20 minutes of their 40-minute set. So, I mean, have a little respect. Just stay till the end. I guess people thought, like, it wasn't going to end for a while, which it didn't. But have some little class. Stay to the end.
I've heard you use the term mass exodus about 6 times in the last 2 days. I know you're prone to exaggeration, so I'm going to say a row or two left. But no, I can't really say
ridiculous.
That. I left before OAR took the stage because I wanted to beat traffic, as I'm sure the mass exodus flock wanted to beat traffic too. And there's nothing wrong with that.
You're that guy that leaves like in the third quarter of football games, aren't you?
No, because football is good and OAR is not. Dana Carvey was funny. The Jabberwockies were an incredible dance crew. And then I didn't care about
America's Best, I hear.
They were America's Best. They're a figment of your imagination.
All right. Well, we took you 2.5 minutes into overtime today. That's 62 and a half minutes for you out there not familiar with our slogan. But I'd like to sign off by saying I did not go to Gator Growl for the third consecutive year because I'm smart and they're not. Send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org. Comment on our blogs. Leave us a review on iTunes if you're really feeling generous. And let us know how much more you enjoyed this podcast with Kyle Maestri as your host rather than that OAR fan, Adam Berry. With that, we are out.
End the show, Berry!